All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It is Thursday, May 26th of 2022. Appreciate you joining the stream here today, or of course, watching or listening to the recording of this video up on YouTube and all major podcast outlets as well. If this is your first time watching Office Hours, my name is Jordan. I'm the head coach here at SaberSim, and this is a live open Q&A style show where I answer questions from our community about SaberSim, about DFS. Your questions drive the conversations. If you have questions you would like me to answer on this show, you can email us, support@sabersim.com. If you're watching me live, you can throw your questions into YouTube chat. And if you're watching live or catching the recording of this, you can post questions into the Office Hours channel in Slack. And as always, there is a link to join the Slack community in the description of every past show. That is my intro here. I'm ready to dive into some questions. Only two in front of me, at least at the moment. Two interesting ones here. A question about ranking and sorting lineups in the build screen. So we'll talk about that. And then another question about the settings for smaller fields, so actually particularly extremely small field GPPs. So we'll take a look at that as well. So I'm going to just tackle these in chronological order here and hit this one first. This is from Mr. T. And this one actually I think may end up being a pretty quick one here. I think we're going to need a build for this. So I'm just going to get this started here while we read the question here. So the question says, hi, Jordan, when you are doing backtesting and running builds, you can rank your lineups in different ways, such as saber score, ownership, or actual points. Are these teams the same 20, 100, or however many teams in your lineups, or are they the best team, best 20, 100, et cetera, from your pool of 500 or 1,000, depending on how you want to rank them? For example, if I rank my lineups by actual score immediately after a build, is it using the lineups that are generated initially by the default saber score or just pulling in the best actual scores from the pool of 500 or 1,000? Good question. So the ranking methods by default sort the entire pool, the whole thing, right? So this build I just did, this is a 20 lineup build, right? But we have a 400 or a 500 lineup pool. So any of these sorting metrics here are going to resort from the entire pool, right? So ownership is always kind of a fun, goofy one to look at. I think shows this pretty well. If we did ownership, lowest to highest. So our lowest ownership lineup in our entire pool of 500, not just 20, is this one. Has 76.7 total combined ownership. So it sorts your entire pool. Now, for a past slate, if we go to yesterday, there is an ability to lock and sort just your top lineups, but only by actual score. So basically this review mode toggle right here, what this does, and the tooltip just explains it pretty well. Isolate your 20 lineups from the pool and sort by actual score. But you can't use review mode for any different kind of sorting that you would like to do. So it is specifically sorting by actual score. Isolate your 20 lineups from the pool and sort by actual score. This will show you the lineups that you theoretically actually played in order from top to bottom of highest to lowest fantasy points. So let me know if that helps. Good question. There's some follow-up there. Happy to help with that as well. That's one of those questions. I get questions on stream sometimes where I can tell somebody's trying to do something. There's a process there. Curious what it is in that particular case. So, and then let's hit this question from 12 Pack here. This is an interesting one. I was pondering this a bit this morning. And he said, I've been looking at the 100-man contests on both sites and running some builds just to see what the lineups look like, but I'm seeing some oddities with the sliders. For tonight's main slate, selecting GPP single entry 11 to 100 is giving me 801, changing to 3 max, 701. Seems like a lot of correlation for a contest that's pretty close to cash. So, I mean, it's funny. When you mentioned this, I actually, my like first response was, those seem to actually be pretty good to me, right? And then I read Shady Advice's responses, and he said, well, those contests are actually really flat payout structures. And I then thought, well, are they actually? And so I think where this gets really interesting is I think you ultimately need to come at this from the standpoint of a payout structure kind of direction. And that is one thing that I would kind of admit that the sliders at the moment don't really account for payout structure, right? This is yesterday's slate. Right? That's like kind of the one thing that isn't really captured. We're essentially assuming that a contest that's a 20 max 10 to 50K, that group of contests that fit into those characteristics all share enough of the same payout structure that the strategy is even, right? Assuming they're all GPPs. But especially as you get down to these, like, you get down to these really small contests, you're going to have some pretty significant differences in payout structure. And it's going to change the way you would theoretically want to play the contest. But I was just poking around here earlier today. I mean, and for what it is worth, these 100 mans on FanDuel that I was looking at, and this may or may not be what you exactly were referring to, right? These are definitely still GPPs. They are truly small field GPPs. We're talking about a 900 prize pool, 250 to first, right? That's like 30% to first. They're actually pretty top heavy. You're only paying out the top 12 people, right? At least for what FanDuel has here. So 12 pack says that's them. Yeah. I mean, these are small field, but these are absolutely top heavy GPPs where it is only the top 12% of the contest is even getting any paid out at all. And they are, 30 something percent to first. If that was a large field contest, if that was a 50,000 lineup contest, that would be an extremely top heavy contest. So I'm perfectly fine playing. You know, what this kind of build is going to do is it's going to say, basically, don't just use average projections, right? Allow for a bit of variance in there, which I think is almost always a good thing. Sim Precision 0 is just kind of weird for GPPs, I think, at all. So I kind of like a little bit of Sim Precision. We're going to avoid ownership fade, right? Just don't get a lot out of ownership fade. You think about the total number of lineups that are in the pool. Talking about a jump from a 10% owned player to a 40% owned player in a 100-man contest is only 30 lineups, right? And you think about how much variance there is and just how once somebody might go about constructing a lineup, that there's only 30 lineups, right? In a much larger contest, that number is much higher. So ownership fade comes down. But correlation, right? That's going to be one of our biggest factors here in building a successful lineup for this kind of contest. So they're 3 maxes. So let's actually use the 3 max settings, right? What these kind of lineups are going to get is they're going to get slightly varied because of the sim precision slider, ownership agnostic lineups that are correlated, that are stacking. So probably stacking, this is DK. Let's actually, hold on. I know we already started the build, but let's jump over to FanDuel so that we can actually do this the right way. Right, but what I would expect for most of these is we're going to get a lineup with a pretty elite pitcher, one of the better pitching plays overall on the slate. So Sim Precision's actually 0 on FanDuel here because the slate's a little bit higher. That's fine. I'm going to turn it to 1 because I like to have 1. And probably like 2 pretty elite stacks, right? So 12-pack says, my concern is that 8 correlation would almost certainly lock me into a single large stack. Is that optimal for beating only 33 people? FanDuel is the 3-max. Yeah, I absolutely think it is. Because since there are so many, there are so few lineups in the pool, you don't need to be optimal, right? You don't need to be perfect. It is probably enough to just be right on the team directionally correct and not have to worry that you have to like nail the exact perfect optimal, right? And you don't even have to probably be on the exact 2 right teams, right? Like these constructions you can see. Okay, so in this example, and there's a variance question here, right? Do you want to be all in on like 3 teams like this? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But, right, I mean, if the Dodgers and Twins together are maybe, so there's 10 games on the slate, so you can pair each team of, all right, hold on. Let's see this. Let's do combinations calculator. So we have, we have 10 pick 2. Okay. So there's 45 combinations of 4-4 stacks, basically in terms of teams that you could use on this slate, right? There's 33 people that you're kind of trying to beat. Like even if you pick like a top 5-ish or 10-ish combination of stacks, you're probably going to be popular, you're probably going to be profitable here, right? When you're building a cash lineup, you are optimizing for, you're doing 2 things. 1, you're optimizing for an average outcome that you don't even get paid out for, right? Cash lineups are optimizing for a top 50th percentile outcome. That's not even in the payout. That's not even in the payout bracket for this contest. But excuse me. Whoa, I choked. But also assuming that you were trying to build like a large field GPP optimized lineup, like optimal type lineup, you are trying to get so much right when you don't need to. In a contest like this, I guess what I'm trying to say, in a contest like this, because of the payout structure, we still need to seek a little bit of upside, right? We are seeking, this is a top heavy small field GPP. So we need upside in the lineup to have win equity in the payout positions to have positive expected value. But because the contest is so small, we don't need to get a lot right to earn a win equity in those top high payout positions. It is generally enough to be basically, this is kind of my take. This is what Saberson says. I'm not saying that this is, I'm open to talking about this. I'm not saying this is like fact. You basically are shooting for upside without having the need to build the optimal, right? So we are earning our win equity in the high payout positions by correlating a lineup and building stacks. And I guess that's what I'm trying to say. So I would not avoid stacks here at all, just because of the top heaviness of the payout structure. So 12-pack says, wouldn't you expect that many of the entries are just jammed in cash lineups? Probably, and that is only going to make the contest softer, right? I wouldn't want to join those people. And you're probably even, and this is one of those things where this is one of the traps of studying sharp players, right? I think this is a common trap. There are going to be players that are playing this contest that have enormous bankrolls and are playing this contest in a way that is not optimized for this contest, but is purely a way to get additional action down on their cash lineup. Right? There's a certain name that jumps out to me right away. So be careful. Be careful, I would say, if you go down the path of like studying what other sharp players do here. Because I think you will find that, you know, in small field GPPs and even some of the single entries, you'll see even, you know, sharp players play suboptimal strategies just to get action down on their cash lineup. So 12-pack said, sure, I just want to get different. I'd want to get different than cash, just working out how much different. Yeah, I would really, these are the kind of lineups I would want to play in this kind of contest. Now, I don't know if I would want to play a Nola Twins Dodger stack in all three. I might maybe differentiate a little bit there just to spread out a little more. But these are the kind of lineups that I would want to play and basically say that, like, I'm going to pick a pitcher that has like a very high probability of success. My pitching pool for this contest would probably be, why is Ohtani, I guess, is just really expensive. I guess that's why we have his ownership projection seems so low. I mean, it feels like Ohtani's playable here. I think like you have a pool of maybe three pitchers that are playable in this contest on FanDuel. Maybe less, but maybe three pitchers, one of the top three overall pitchers here. And then probably just like a full 4-4 stacks of some of the best projected teams on the slate, right? So Twins are 4-6. So Dodgers. So yeah, I mean, like if I was like kind of just like trying to do this with a gut check by hand right now, I would probably have some combination of Ohtani, Nola, and Montas as my only pitchers available in that contest. I would probably have Dodgers in almost every lineup. And then I would have like some combination of Nationals, Twins, Red Sox, White Sox, and Angels stacks as like some of the other options there. And I think that's basically kind of the pool of viable lineups that I would be building from. I'm curious. Let's see. Let's expand this pool a little bit and see what this looks like if we make this a little bit bigger. But so, yeah, I mean, pretty close on the pitchers. A little bit more of some of these other guys on the stacks. Oops. Dodgers, Twins. So a couple other teams kind of pop their heads in here, but pretty heavily Dodgers, Twins. So, yeah, but that's what I think is the optimal strategy, is to build a correlated lineup to shoot for upside and don't worry about trying to, like, be optimal at all. So DG said personal preference, stack everything in MLB, the highest ceiling. Yeah, I guess. Okay, so I did want to say the one other point I wanted to kind of wrap around on here is that like it does depend on the payout structure a little bit here. And I think part of the reason I'm so interested in stacking like that is because the payout structure is top heavy. DK does have like these weird contests They have these contests called contests. Contest? That are like kind of similar, also small field. You know, so something like this. That is not as top heavy, right? Where, actually that one is. But, you know, especially at like these smaller fields, right? You have these, they have these like really flat payout structure, small field contests that I don't even think are worth playing. But these, like, there's a lot more equity in the min cash positions that I think you could justify potentially spreading out a little bit more, maybe playing something a little more cashy there. But cool. Good question. So, all right. Yeah, the last thing, actually, no, I'm going to leave it there. Let's go ahead and jump to the next question. DG said, in Showdown, for instance, 0-0-10 sliders. If they're all single game sims, what determines the Saber score? I forgot. It is the raw scoring upside of the what that lineup scored in the individual sim that it represents. And also, as a kind of a secondary component, is that single lineup optimal for multiple different sets of sims, right? So basically all lineups are scored. If you were to run 0-0-10 sliders on a Showdown contest, let's do NBA. It's more fun. So let's run this here. Okay, so we're going to run this, right? And it's basically going to take 500 individual game sims and build the optimal. And then what it is essentially going to do here is it is going to rank them by what was the highest scoring lineup in that lineup's individual simulation, with an added component of if a singular lineup is optimal for more than one sim, it gets a Saber score boost. And you can actually see that. It doesn't look like we have one here. You can occasionally see it. Okay, so it looks like there's a one here. So if there's a Saber score like jump, this is kind of more of a rule of thumb rather than a fact. But a lot of times if there is a Saber score jump like that, you know, you can see as we're going here, 100, 99.6, 99.5, 99.4, 99.3, 99.1, 98. Oh, that's actually not as big as I thought. 98.8. A lot of times if there's a jump of like a full point that you'll sometimes occasionally see, especially at the top, you don't see it as often as you go down. That is often actually what that is. It is actually that there's a... So if this was like 199.6 and then this was like 97.5, a lot of times it's because the first two lineups are optimal for actually multiple sets of simulations, and then the third lineup is the highest scoring lineup that is only optimal for a singular sim. Or something to that effect, right? The numbers can kind of vary. So anyway, essentially a combination of highest scoring raw fantasy output in its associated simulation, and is it optimal for multiple different sets of simulations is what goes into that. So. A meme says, how can we hack tennis to do a bimodal distribution? I don't know. Oh, gosh. I don't know. So what this is really referring to is, so tennis kind of like, not, well, let's find somebody that has like a, so tennis would probably roughly have similar distributions, but probably a little bit more bimodal to something like MMA, because it's a one versus one sport where there's a winner and a loser, right? MMA, you kind of have this multimodal distribution because you have lose by like get finished, basically. Lose by whatever that's called. Lose by decision, win by decision, and then a finishing win, right? So you kind of have this multimodal distribution. Tennis, we would expect that you'd have like a bimodal, right? Win and loss. At the moment, the reason we don't have sims up for tennis yet. So you can upload custom projections and build lineups, but when you do so, you make an assumption that every player has a normal distribution, which is not bimodal. So the question is, how do we hack it? I'll have to think on that, honestly. I bet there's like a fun... okay. So, I mean, one thing you could do... Oh, God, I don't know. I don't know if there's an easy way to do it. So, I mean, for what it's worth, I had a couple entries into like the opening day of the French Open. And I just built... I used basically, and this is, I'm not recommending anybody do this. I wanted a little bit of a tennis sweat. So I converted like vig free money line odds into implied probabilities, and then just built with a ton of randomness and built my lineups that way, and then made some adjustments there and just assumed that, yeah, nobody's normally distributed in tennis, but if I make the randomness that high, the standard deviation is so big that I can kind of just accomplish what I want there in the build screen. That's what I used to do on MMA before we had Sims up as well, to moderate success. I'd have to think on this a little bit more if there's like a clever way to get by in the meantime. I would say, you know, don't spend hours on it, because tennis sims are the initial work on tennis sims has started. And I would say cautious optimism that we'll have it for the Wimbledon. Don't go too hard on trying to figure out exactly how to make it work without Sims, because the Sims are not too far. So, all right. Question from TRD. And the question says, I've been doing some serious tweaking with the settings to see what the limits are for building lineups and exploring the boundaries of the settings before I develop some sort of process. I've been trying to keep my ownership under 125% for bigger GPPs. So I've been first changing team exposures before changing individual exposures. If I want to keep a player from that team, I usually enter a minimum percent of that for that player. Does that affect the other players that would be correlated with in any weird way? I'm also wondering if the ownership is based on higher stakes GPPs or if it's pulled from various sources to reflect both small and larger GPPs. Okay, good questions. Yeah, so we'll kind of talk through this here, I guess, in pieces. So first point, this isn't a question, but this is a great way to learn how to use SaberSim. This is how I got familiar with a lot of the functionalities on the site, a lot of the build settings in particular, and the sliders, right? Just see what happens when you move things around, when you have time and you're not in a time crunch to run builds, right? I mean, I got a very intuitive sense of what the sliders do by literally running builds like, I don't know, 10, 0, 10. Like, what does that do? Like, let's literally just see what kind of lineups we get out of that. So I love the idea of kind of limit testing things here and there and just seeing what happens. I think it's a great way to get familiar. I can't let this go by without making a note about it. Be careful of ownership sum heuristics. First of all, ownership sum in general isn't the best metric for determining how unique or how leveraged a lineup even is anyway. One of the things that we want to do next is provide a little bit better calculations for that ownership kind of thing anyway. But even if we did have those better calcs, heuristics in general just miss a ton of context. So if you're saying, you know, 125% or less for large field GPPs, right? A classic example, right, is... You know, what if Otani's projection was this, right? Well, his ownership projection, you know, and his ownership projection is this, and maybe it's still too low, right? Like, if you have some spectacularly projected play, ownership's going to go up on that guy, and it's probably still good to play some of that guy or all of that guy, and your heuristics go out the window. They're averages, and averages have the same limitations no matter what you're talking about. So I don't hate it. I think it's not a bad way to get familiar with the concept of ownership. I did something similar for a long time. I did kind of like a slate size adjusted ownership sum calc that I used, and that would end up being what my max ownership was on the slate. And again, not going to kill you, but it's not my favorite. But then there's other questions here. Changing team exposures before changing individual exposures. If I want to keep a player from a team, I usually enter a minimum percent for that player. Does it affect the other players? Wait, what's this build? Sorry, I got distracted, guys. Does it affect the other players that would be correlated in any weird way? It doesn't affect them in a weird way, but it affects them in a correlated way, right? Because we're sorting through pools of lineups here. So if you all of a sudden say, right, so we have, let's pick, Let's pick the White Sox. So if you all of a sudden decide that you want, I don't know, 50% exposure to Tim Anderson, right? Oh, what? I don't know what I just did. Okay, so if you all of a sudden you want 50% exposure to Tim Anderson, right? You're also going to make the White Sox a prominent stack because it's going to pull in Tim Anderson lineups, of which he's probably correlated. He's correlated to other White Sox players. Oh, we have. I remember. I know what's going on here. Right. So it's. So yes, it does. I mean, I wouldn't say it doesn't affect other players in a weird way, but it does affect players in a correlated way. One thing, I mean, I have run into, I've seen this before where, you know, someone might say, I want a lot of Tim Anderson one-offs, right? So I want 50 and I want 50% Tim Anderson, but I want 0% White Sox stacks, right? You are very likely to see this message really quickly when you go that route. So if you are opinionated on having a certain player not in a stack, rostering a ton of a player in a way that he is not correlated to any of his teammates, you're going to be better off. And I don't know if this is what you're actually trying to do. It doesn't even sound like it is. But if that's the case, you will be better off doing some work ahead of time to get your lineups the way you want them to be in that way. Primarily, what I would recommend doing is like setting a stacking rule and specifying the exact teams that you are comfortable stacking, and then limiting and removing players from your pool on teams that you don't want to stack so that you get, you know, exposure to Tim Anderson one-offs if you want them, right? So like maybe you remove all the other White Sox bats and turn White Sox stacks off, but then pump up Tim Anderson's projection a little bit, right? Because if you just default settings, default projections, default everything, build lineups with SaberSim and then say, no, I want Tim Anderson, but in a way that's non-correlated, You're not going to get that by default. So anyway, again, I kind of tangent there because I don't think that's what this question is about. But let me know if that helps. Cool. What else we got? What other questions do we have here today? How many of you guys' lineups Brian Harmon in it for the Schwab, Charles Schwab. I didn't play golf this week. And I feel sadistic for it, but I am dying laughing over here. I think I saw that he's like almost 50% in like high stakes single entry and plus 7 or +8 in the first day. I'm sure this is a painful experience for some of you guys in the audience here. But That's come on. There's nothing funnier than that, right? Like the chalkiest golfer in a tournament is 40% owned in large field GPPs and just completely goes out and blows it on the first day. Luke asked a question here, and said, what SaberSim settings would you use for $1 to $5 100 man leagues? Yeah. So I would, again, it depends a little bit on the payout structure, but provided that, you know, I would say at least 10% of the prize pool goes to first, I would assume it's playing it like a GPP, and I would build it like this, right? GPP, 10% plus to first with, you know, that kind of size contest is still going to be a GPP kind of contest. It's most likely a single entry. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's a 3 max. Doesn't change much. And then 11 to 100. And we talked about this a lot actually at the start of the stream too. So I'd rewind and check out that conversation as well if you're interested in more of a deep dive there. But what you will get out of here is you will get these lineups that don't really focus too much about ownership, allow just a little bit of variance in the form of sim precision in there, and then build big stacks. And the goal of these lineups will basically be to play a pretty well-projected pitcher or two well-projected pitchers, pick two pretty well-projected stacks, not worry so much about trying to nail individual players that hit home runs or rack up stolen bases, just like try to get two teams that are well-projected, that as a team have a good hitting outlook that night. And let's, I mean, let's, I mean, now that now I'm curious, so let's run a couple on DraftKings too and kind of see what we get out of this. But, you know, for DK, I'd be hoping two good pitchers, 5-3, 5-2, 4-4, 4-3, maybe 4-2 kind of stacks here. Because you want to shoot for upside. You want to earn that win equity in the high pay positions so you get paid, right? But you don't need to get everything perfect. If the Dodgers have a good night, it's probably just enough to have a Dodger stack. You don't need exactly the three guys that hit bombs, right? And we don't even need to build a whole pool here. I'm curious just what this looks like. So, yeah, there you go. So kind of similar. 4-3, 5-3, 5-3. In this case, on DK, more popular direction here is paying up for Ohtani and then getting stone minimum Pilkington against the Tigers. Seems like a pretty good approach. And then a Nola and Ohtani version of the same lineup with cheaper stacks where you get away from the Dodgers. So I like those lineups for that kind of contest. Gap Boy Steven said, "Hey, Jordan, first night I played 20 lineups in the 5-cent contest. Other night I got one in the top 50. And last night I played 50 lineups in the contest. I got like three in the top 500. Is that..." Now I'm on the edge of my seat. I don't know how this one finishes. I assume, is that normal? Probably not. It depends. I'm trying to think about like how big these are. But that contest, that 5-cent contest on FanDuel, I assume you're talking about, that is huge. So, you know, is that good? Okay, is that good? Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's great. So like that contest is Google calculator. How big is this contest, right? It's 120,000 entrants most nights, right? So you put one in the top 50? Whoa, what? What happened? Whoops, I messed up. Oh, I see. So that was a top 0.04% outcome. That's great. That's awesome. And I mean, it goes to show you. So this contest, right? This one, what am I doing here? Size. How do I find it? There it is. So I talk about this contest a lot as like being a good one to play, right? And I think it is, in that it is a really good way to learn how to 150 max. It's very kind to your bankroll because even though it is enormous, there's a 2x min cash. That's very flat and it is so soft. It is enormously soft. With that said, right, like there's me saying, yeah, that's a 0.04 percentile outcome. That's great. And then there's you realizing that, well, I only got $3 for that or whatever it was, which is still, you know, $3 is a 60x return on a nickel, right? But it's $3. So it kind of goes both ways with this contest. I think it's a great way to learn how to 150 max. You should be definitely proud of those results. It is a hard contest to bankroll build on because it is so huge and the contest is flat. Like for the same reason it's friendly to learning how to 150 max, it's also very hard to build a bankroll on because it's so hard like to long-term like grind a really significant like margin here because you're trying to beat out 119,000 lineups. So, but anyway, yeah, I mean, it's still a great result. That's awesome. I do think, you know, I think FanDuel does have like a pretty nice little like low stakes offering here. As well. This is good like practice area for $7.50 to get familiar with what 150 lineups feels like. This is a similar contest where there's a little bit more up top from a percentage standpoint. It's still just 5%, but there's like a little bit more to fight for here. It's a little more winnable on a daily basis, or not a daily basis, but it's a little more winnable period without just pulling off like a really impressive score. I think this is also a good contest as kind of the next one to jump into too, as well, of a contest that is a little sharper. It's going to be a little harder to beat, but raw probability is a little bit easier. You know, if you think about what's a 0.04, right? Let's actually, you know, if you had the same outcome in this contest, it would be like a top two finish. So. But yeah, no, that's great. Aaron says, how do you feel about going all in on 1.5 stack in a 20 max? It's a risk tolerance thing. How do I feel about it? It's probably too aggressive for me. Depends on the slate, but it's probably pretty rare. It would have to be, it would need like a combination of a team that was extremely well projected over all others, like probably at least at one implied run total over the rest of the teams. And then probably so many good viable pitching options, like a very spread out slate of pitching options that I felt like I could still differentiate my lineups enough from there. I typically play pretty spread out on my exposure. So I think it's unlikely about that I would be all in on one stack into 20 max, but it's a risk tolerance thing. There's nothing wrong with that. There might be no difference in EV between that approach and mine. It's just how variant do you want your swings to be as you realize your EV. If you're right on the stack, you know, let's say I have 40% Dodger stacks and you have 100 and the Dodger stacks are the nuts, you're going to have a lot more shots at it than I am. But when they're not, I've got a lot more lineups to play with. I've got a lot of lineups that aren't dead. So mostly a risk tolerance thing of how risk averse do you want to play. So Tracy said, where does Sabre get the implied runs from? Is it Vegas or the Sims itself? It is from the Sims themselves. It is the arithmetic mean, the average of total runs scored in simulations. So Twins 4.6, that means if you take the total runs scored by the Twins in every simulation divided by the total number of simulations, that number would be 4.6. And that's how all of the projections are calculated. That's true of these projections and the detailed stat projections as well for things like home runs. This is Mike Trout, 0.33 home runs. That is total number of home runs hit in every sim divided by number of simulations. So, oh, yeah, Tracy asked a question, and I realize somebody else had asked about this earlier, and I didn't get to it. Does Sabre ownership projection come from larger stake GPP or smaller stakes? It is for a large field GPP. So there are projections for, like, I would say if you were looking for a contest to basically say, what are we projecting ownership for? It is roughly the flagship. So it is roughly flagship being like the 50K to first, 150 max contest. And that's true on FanDuel as well, except I think it's a 25K to first there. But we're essentially projecting ownership for this contest. That's essentially what they are. And ownership will change as you move around from that. So as your ownership will condense as contests get smaller, they will condense as the stakes get higher as well. As contests get bigger, right? There are contests bigger than that one in the lobby. The Minimax, both Minimaxes are bigger than that contest. And they're both lower stakes. So I think it's probably generally safe to assume that ownership will probably be pretty similar in the mini max to that contest as well, but it might spread out a little bit more than that even. So it is for a large field GPP. Dat Boy said, tonight I played DK for the first time. I'm going to play a $1 single entry. How would I go about playing a single entry? Yeah, so I'll show you kind of what I use when I do single entry contests. So let's say you're playing the Daily Dollar. First thing you'll want to start with, use the default contest settings for that particular contest, right? So it's a $1, it's a GPP, it's a single entry, and it's, I think, like 3,000 entrants, something like that. So use the default settings. They're optimized for that contest. If this start new build button is grayed out like it is on my screen, one thing you can do to kind of just avoid that, just change the number of lineups to like 10. It'll at least let you build lineups. And then what we're going to do here is we're going to build you 500 lineups to pick from. So you don't need 500, but we're going to build you 500, and we're going to sort them by Sabre score to find what we think are the best ones to play. And the way I prefer to go about finding a single lineup to play is I look at the top lineup and I look for reasons to eliminate that lineup until I can't find any more reasons. And those reasons are based on my own research or stack sizes or, you know, even your gut feels, right? If you're playing a single lineup and you have 500 to work from, it's totally fine to make some gut calls as well. So I will go over here and first of all, we'll change that back down to one. So we just have a single lineup. And to see this lineup on DK, you have to make two changes to to comply with their compliance rules. So I'll just make two very small changes to projections, which won't have a big impact. And now we can see the lineup. And now I will basically look for reasons to eliminate the lineup, right? Like I said before. So maybe one reason to eliminate the lineup right off the bat that jumps out to me is maybe I don't want to play a 3-3-2 stack. So I'm going to go over to 3-3-2 stacks and I'm going to say eliminate 3-3-2s from the tool. Okay, so now we have a 5-2 stack. Nola, Otani. It's a national stack with two. Okay, so maybe for this lineup. So I kind of like this lineup, but one thing, I don't know if I want to play a 9-hole hitting Johan Camargo. I don't think that's necessarily wrong, but I don't want like this one-off batting that low in the order. So I'm just going to uncheck that one because I don't like that lineup. Fill back up to another lineup and see what the next one is. This one looks pretty good. 4-2-2. Again, I like the pitchers. Looks like a pretty good lineup. Maybe I'm done here, right? But you can kind of continue to go through this until you're satisfied and find that one lineup that you like. And that's how I typically do it. I don't play one lineup all that often, but that's how I like to do this here, is use the default settings, build yourself a big pool to work from, and then based on your own research, your own intuition, whatever else goes into your process, kind of figure out what lineup you want to play. Knowing all the lineups in your pool are viable and you have 500 of them, it's pretty easy to kind of find a good one there. I mean, you could even take this, you know, maybe you already decided that, you know, you want to play, gosh, I don't know. Maybe you want to play a White Sox line or a Nationals lineup, right? Maybe you can just come in here and just say, you know, 100% exposure to Nationals and do it that way. So Aaron Neal says, the daily dollar is harder to win than the 25-cent mini max. It is and it isn't, right? You have less, you can take up less equity in that contest, right? You're one out of 3,000 or whatever. It's harder to win in that way, but it's softer in that way as well, because there's a greater number of effective entrants. There's a lot more dead money pushing up everybody else's positive EV lineups there. So yeah, I think I would say, yes, it's probably harder to win. It's probably a higher ROI, theoretical ROI over the long term. So Jen says, pretty impressive that Saberson projects total runs pretty close to that of Vegas. In case there's a discrepancy, is it a good idea to override it with Vegas numbers? It can be. Vegas is not perfect, right? Like Vegas provides a very good average in general. But I mean, sharp bettors beat Vegas, like Vegas lines. I would say it's not necessarily a clear cut case where if a team total is off, that you should just insta adjust it. I should also note that we do a little bit of that of our own as well. So we have a built in review process that will basically flag a situation where we are very far off from Vegas on a team, and we can make some adjustments there if we need to on a game by game basis. So that, I think it's worth noting that if you see a team where we're a half run off from Vegas or something like that, like, and it's up live in the app, that is up there and has passed one review already, basically. So we're pretty confident in what we're seeing there. I would say better than just blindly adjusting towards Vegas, I would say maybe take it as an opportunity to do a little bit more research. Maybe there is a pitch count situation for one pitcher that, you know, that something is that either we're missing, or maybe we have a little bit of an edge there, or something like that. So I think it can be a good flag of like, hey, I should look a little closer at this, but sometimes it's an ownership edge, right? You know, maybe there's a team like that today. Let's go see. I like this Fantasy Labs dashboard to do this kind of stuff. LA, we're pretty high on Twins. Oh, this is, let's do this. Sox, Nationals, Rockies. We're pretty close. Typically, when I look for discrepancies, I look for a situation where we're like a little bit far away and going the wrong direction on a team. I think that can kind of be a useful sign. I'm looking for an example of that, but I don't really see one. So let me see. See if we can find one. Detroit. Looks pretty clean here today. I'll just make one up. So a good example would be like, let's say we had the Dodgers at 4-8 and Vegas opened at 5-3 and it grew to 5-6, right? So that's kind of what I mean of like Vegas starting above or below us and then moving in the opposite direction. That sometimes is a flag that we might be missing something. But again, anything you're seeing on the app, on the live version of the app, has already passed one round of that kind of review already. So, do you run an optimal lineup every night before MLB before you start your process? I don't run an optimal all the time, like meaning like a cash lineup. I haven't found that that's like super helpful for my process. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. If it's helpful for yours, I get it. Knowing like, here's what the cash lineup looks like. Here's what like the most likely cash top 10 lineups look like for cash games. I think it makes some sense. It can be good to figure out what the chalk's going to look like too. I do run what I call a test build every single night. And that's like, for the contest that I'm going to be playing, I build lineups for that contest on SaberSim. So I'll come in here and I'll say, you know, maybe I'm playing the $4. And I will almost always, no matter how much time I have, no matter what else I'm going to do before I enter my lineups, I always start with default settings test build. And that will show me kind of like if I left SaberSim up to its own devices and added no value elsewhere to the process, what would be my kind of angle on the slate. And I will pull this up. And I'll primarily look at what are the players that I'm the highest exposed to? How am I navigating the chalkiest players? Like what chalk am I eating? What chalk am I fading? And I guess it's mostly those two things. Those are probably the two things that I'm most interested in looking in. So I'll show you. And that kind of just like sets the tone. Like sometimes I don't have a ton of time and sometimes I'll end up just varying slightly off of this. Other times I'll end up going in a kind of a different direction. But, you know, I'll like to, so, you know, tonight, I guess I'll kind of just do this live, almost like stream of consciousness here, right? Like of note to me is that it's a pretty limited pitching slate. Like seems like there's like a little bit of a value opportunity with minimum Pilkington guy here. But Nola and Otani seem to be like basically the nuts at pitching and pretty heavily exposed to both of those guys. I would expect, and it makes sense that we're getting this, that we're pretty, we're pretty flat on pitchers or on batters. Sorry. We're not super exposed to any one team since we're already pretty concentrated on pitchers. And it looks like we're taking most of our stands on batters as well, like a pretty aggressive fade of the Dodgers and Twins chalk here, a little bit of exposure to these guys, but fading them most heavily. So that kind of seems like the angle here to start is like, just play the best two pitchers for the most part and get off of chalky bats and get over to some lower owned stacks like Texas, Philly, Washington, Oakland, etc. So that's kind of, I would like help set the tone there for me. And I would maybe confirm over here that Vegas thinks the chalk is the same as SaberSim does, which it does, Dodgers and Twins. And I would go from there. Cool. Wesley said, hardest working man in the game. How's it going? I don't know if I deserve that, but I appreciate it. It's going good. How are you? Welcome back. Welcome back. I feel like the hardest working man this week. We're moving here. I've mentioned it a couple of times on stream. First weekend in June, packing up, which is always a bit of a beast. So I actually haven't been playing as much DFS just because I've had to be spending some time getting that done and can't be around to make sure lineups are coming out and update things. It's a little easier with baseball. There would be no chance if it was NBA season, but getting all packed up. Should have exciting new background, a proper place to run this stream from as opposed to the living room like we've had here for a while now. So looking forward to it, an upgrade. But all right. Let's see. Question from Luke here. If SaberSim keeps giving you two chalk pitchers, can you tell SaberSim to only use one per lineup? Yeah, you can. So you could do it. There's a couple different ways to do it. I think the easiest thing to do And the most like effective way of getting this done would be create a player group. So you can go in here and create a group, add a group rule. So Ohtani and Nola, perfect example tonight, right? And say no more than, less than or equal to one. You could also say equals one if you wanted to make sure you had one in every lineup, but you'll probably get that anyway. So less than or equal to one of those guys. You know what's funny? A lot of times when I've run these, and we'll see what we get out of this here. When I've experimented with this in the past, a lot of times if you've got two pitchers like this where SaberSim's like, yeah, I love both of these guys, play 100% of both of them. And you're like, no, you only get to have one. It'll just play 100% of one. Like there's one of these guys that projects better than the other. And that's the one that ends up showing in a bunch. You can edit exposures to balance that out a little bit, but it has been a trend I've noticed. I'm interested to see if we get that here. But yeah, I think a player group is the best way to do that. So another feature that you know, we've had so many releases over this year. A little spread out, 70% Nola, 30%, or 70% Ohtani, 30% Nola. So. The player groups, I was going to say, right? We've had a lot of features come out this year. It's hard to even remember that player groups is still pretty new. This time last year, that was a very hard question for me to answer. I want no Ohtani and Nola lineups together. Right? That was a pain in the ass last year, but you can really do a lot here now in terms of getting your lineups exactly the way you want. So, but HC said moving is the worst, but rewarding when you're done. Yeah, and we're not even at the worst part of it yet. I mean, it's the packing phase. That move day can be a lot, but I'm excited for it. It'll be good. Good change. Good time for something new. All right. What else we got? Any other questions for me here? Getting close to the hour mark. Start wrapping up here. But happy to answer any other questions before we finish up. While I'm waiting for the last couple round of questions, maybe to trickle in here, I will mention, of course, as always, a free 7-day trial on our site, sabersim.com. If you've used the trial in the past, we reset everybody's trial at the start of baseball season, so you could get another free 7 days. We've added a ton. I was just talking about it a minute ago, but I mean, when I look back to what SaberSim looked like a year ago, right? I mean, for those of you that have been here for this entire year, right? That was even before the redesign, right? But since the redesign, I mean, the redesign is a big one, but we've done, you know, the player groups, the entry editor update that just came out, sending your exposures and projections back to builds, a new and updated quick swap, all kinds of stuff that doesn't even account for the models. We've had NASCAR, MMA, Formula One, updates to Counter-Strike, League of Legends, the big sports have all gotten facelifts on the models. We've put in a ton of work this past year. So if you checked us, if you were here, you know, in the past and you're seeing what's been going on, definitely get signed up for another trial. Come give us another try. We've added so much to the app in the last year. So I don't see any other questions coming in here. We'll go ahead and leave it there for today's show. Good luck on tonight's main slate. Good luck in the rest of your No Harmon PGA lineups for the rest of the tournament here, unless he turns it around, right? You never know, right? It's golf. I will be right back again here for tomorrow for another stream, 2 p.m. Eastern. And until then, take care. See everybody.